Good evening, and welcome to the August 22nd, 2006 meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met in closed session, and we had a conference with our real property negotiator. The two properties we discussed were a portion of San Luis Obispo High School adjacent to the district office overlooking Johnson Avenue, and then also the vacant Fairview School site on Toro Creek Road in Morro Bay. We discussed student personnel items, a consideration of waiver of California high school exit exam requirement for students with disabilities, and we discussed status of negotiations with employees and positions exempt from the merit system. And okay. Talking about the approval of minutes, we had a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by?
I'll second.
Mrs. Botwin. Are you doing the motion for both minutes, June 20th and July 18th? Okay, very good.
I do have a change I want to make, though.
I have a question also.
Okay. Mrs. Botwin, you had some discussion.
Yeah, my only change I want to make is on page 4 of the July 18th minutes, number 12. And I found that a little bit fuzzy, but most of us were fuzzy at that time of night at the end of the meeting, and I know a couple of us that were fuzzy. And I had a couple of small changes I want to make. The first one is Mrs. Botwin asked the board to stand by its calendar in the future, since she had arranged a vacation with the understanding there would be no evaluation on May 16th. Okay, and then go on and finish the sentence as it is. So that's one word change. The next one is the next sentence. It says other board members. Now before that, it says, but the board didn't meet to complete the superintendent's evaluation. And I want to add to that, thereby depriving her of participation in the final evaluation process. Now let me finish and get to the end. It says no action was taken. I would delete that line, no action was taken regarding evaluation, and simply say Mrs. Botwin graciously withdrew her additional comment for the final superintendent evaluation. But you can leave out the graciously if you want.
Okay.
All right, so I'll go through it again because I know you probably didn't get it. The one is a one-word change. I knew, of course, there would be a board meeting I was missing. I let you guys know months ahead of time. The evaluation was the problem there. And then it says, but the board did meet to complete the superintendent's evaluation. Add in there, thereby depriving her of participation in the final evaluation process. And then leave in what you have, the other board members assured, but go down to no action was taken and cut that line, adding Mrs. Botwin withdrew her additional comment for the final superintendent evaluation. And that would be the end of it, period.
Okay. I'm going to go to Mrs. Dickinson first and then to Mr. Millar.
I don't know. Is this? Well, I was. Okay. Number 8. Approval of agreements with contracted employees, assistant superintendent, business services, assistant superintendent, educational services superintendent. It ends with the meeting recessed without voting on that, but we did. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but we did actually vote on that and pass it that evening. And we also made a decision not to have the physical annual exam requirement. So those two things I don't think are in here anywhere.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Millar.
Mrs. Botwin's second change is an incorrect characterization of what happened, and I don't agree with it being included in the minutes. And if she feels like she was excluded, if she wanted to say she was thereby deprived of attending that meeting and participating in the superintendent's evaluation, that's fine. But she was not excluded from participating in the superintendent's evaluation.
Okay.
I'd like to respond to that, please.
Please.
We had the three dates, Walter. I understand what you're saying. I almost agree with you, but not quite. we had the three dates in place 2 months before, because I had asked you guys back in February. So we had the three dates for the evaluation. The 16th was not one of them. The final evaluation was to be on June 6th. So I knew I was missing the board meeting. That's not the question. But I was a little uncomfortable that I had missed that final evaluation. And I'm not cutting what you said, the other board members assured, her input was received, et cetera. I did feel, as we talked about at that meeting, that the dinner, and this was about 9 o'clock, 9:30 at night, I did feel, Chris, and we talked about this for quite a few minutes, that I had been excluded because the date was ignored and the final evaluation was done. I did not have my input for whatever it was worth. Forever, how much I may have influenced the rest of you, hither or yon, doesn't matter. But I did, at the end, graciously withdrew my additional comments for the final superintendent evaluation. Now, we can leave off the graciously. I was trying to be gracious and putting in graciously. But I felt deprived of that opportunity for that evaluation, that whether or not it would have affected anything different, mm-hmm. I didn't have that opportunity, and I felt that that was, I didn't want to have that in the minutes the way it was. It makes me look like kind of a bozo, and I quite often do look like a bozo. That's okay. But the
part that says that you weren't allowed to participate in the evaluation that I take exception to.
Other comments? Okay. I would like to make a suggestion, although we do have, we have a motion and a second on the floor, mm-hmm. with some discussion. So I'm going to bring this forward to the board for an up or down vote, and then I'm going to suggest that if the board decides that that all of the suggestions that have come forward from board members are not appropriate, perhaps we could look at each one individually and either vote on that individually or have some discussion on that. I'm going to start with Mrs. Dickinson. Mrs. Dickinson had some technical things that we talked about, and I'd like to review what those were so that we have some clarity on what it is that you're asking so that the minutes can reflect those. Can somebody help me with that, please?
Well, I just didn't see anywhere in the minutes that we actually did finally come back after our recess and approve the contracts. I don't think it's in here, and that's pretty important that we did that.
Okay.
That evening.
So the first change that we'd be voting on is the language that, as we're going through this, the first change within this motion is the language to reflect the vote on the superintendent's contract, right?
Right. I think there should be a number.
Number 8.
Okay.
Well, we did. We stopped there, but then we came back to it, and we voted, and we passed it. So that's not in here later. It should be in there later then,
Mrs.
or something.
Holmes.
I'm looking back in my previous notes, and because we kind of moved around in items that night, it got a little confusing, and I managed to jump over that section, but I'm seeing here that we returned to item 8 right after you completed the self-evaluation and had a brief discussion and took a vote by Walter and Adrian and unanimously approved those contracts.
And is that reflected in the minutes that we currently...
It is not. It should appear on the final page between item 13 and 11.
Okay.
Item 8 should be repeated because that's where we revisited it and completed that action.
Okay.
Of the June 20th. I amend my motion to move approval of the June 20th, 06.
That amendment?
I second that.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Passes 7-0. We need a motion for the second for July 18th. Would somebody like to make a motion for that, please?
Madam, sitting next to Marilyn. Chris, what? Before we do that, are we going to finish the item number 12?
We have approved June 20th,
right.
And we're now moving on to July 18th.
Okay.
We're starting from scratch from July 18th.
Okay, then I move second on that, and I have a question about
okay.
it.
Okay, so Mrs. Botwin, are you making the motion for July 18th?
Yes.
Okay, who's going to be seconding that?
What's the motion?
The motion is to approve the minutes of July 18th with the changes from both Mrs. Botwin and Mrs. Dickinson. Okay? That's how I'm reading this one. So I have a motion on the floor. I need a second for that, please.
Second.
Okay, well, we already have them. I'm having you make the motion, Caroline.
Walter made the motion. I'm sorry.
Walter withdrew that motion. So I need a motion, and I'm going to need a second. Okay, so
if
yeah, okay. This motion then dies for a lack of second. I would entertain another motion, please.
I would make a motion that number 12 reflect that the request to reopen the discussion on the superintendent's evaluation was not approved by the board, and that the other comments here, or the ones that are asked to be added, are superfluous to that one fact, because a number of things aren't accurate, really, because there was no calendaring issue at an earlier meeting that was raised. It was something in a discussion that didn't become formal.
That's not quite right, John. It was on the following, from the time that I asked the board if they would go along with the three dates, extending them and canceling the 16th and extending it to June 6th, on the following Friday, calendar items that we received in every board, the future agenda, those three dates I had asked for were on them. So there was verification. They weren't in the notes. Nobody had put them down in the...
That all of us can say is that the calendaring was not established clearly at the time that meeting was held, that there was a process prior to that date that was followed. And I don't know if there's any additional language here that is going to fully explain the different approaches to this. I mean, I think we need to get down to the facts we can agree upon, because this could take hours.
Too.
And basically, the calendaring at that meeting, when it was finalized, did not indicate the continuance to another date. And the discussions prior to that were held, and there was a process for which the evaluation was completed, and the board as a body moved forward at that date, recognizing that a quorum is present and a decision was made, and that's what happened on that date.
Okay.
That's all.
I understand what you... I'm sorry, Chris.
I was going to say, and again, what I'm looking for to help Mrs. Holmes is some specific language that could encapsulate your thoughts there, John, and then we're still going to need a second for this once you come up with that language. Can you help me with that?
You know, I guess I'm having a problem only...
That's going to be something we'll have...
I'm having a problem only because this is... somewhat subjective, mm-hmm. in terms of a recollection, and I think this is part of the issue regarding how specific.
I do have the proof at home, John, and I called you and told you about it.
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is what took place that night is there was a discussion about reopening the evaluation, and that was not done that night, and that the process was followed to that point, and there was an agreement by majority of the board that the contracts would be approved. I'm just trying to kind of winnow this down to a point where we can have a motion. That's all.
You know, I'd be happy to, if we wanted to make a change here, Chris. The my whole thrust on this was, and I didn't want to put it this way, but in the second line, it says Mrs. Botwin asked the board to stand by its calendaring, mm-hmm. in the future.
Okay.
Now, if I can get the board's commitment to that, I'm going to take this and frame it, because many times different board members have missed a meeting and asked that some item of particular interest to them be planned for another meeting so they wouldn't miss that night for discussion and or voting. This has happened a number of times over the years, and you have done it once or twice yourself, and we all do it. So what happened here is the same kind of thing. I had asked, and it was not. So I could cut this whole thing down.
It's because really what we're talking about is recollections in the past wanting to change this item. And in fact, we're really having this discussion right now. So I would be happy
to
I think that might be a better way to do it. Mrs. Dickinson? I'm sorry, Mr. Millar first. I apologize.
I was actually going to move that we adopt item 12 in the minutes as is.
Well, and okay, we have a first of all, we have. I did not see a motion. I didn't call for a second on Mr. Spadafore's motion, so I need to get this a little bit back under control. Mr. Spadafore, do you want to continue with that motion, or would you like to withdraw it at this time, or find out if you got a second? What would you like to do?
I'll defer, and Caroline can do the motion she suggested to kind of winnow this down a little bit to be succinct.
Yeah. Okay. I like Chris. I like your idea.
Okay.
That we go ahead and we approve this as is, as Walt is recommending, and that we have this discussion that we're having here, that it comes down to future calendaring, that the board stand by there, and maybe perhaps I should have made it known I didn't remind more than two of you that I wouldn't be there, and that that therefore don't forget it's going to be on the 6th, and one of them was our president. So
do we have a second for before anybody makes that second, Mr. Millar? Could I recommend that you adopt Mrs. Dickinson's change to reflect the vote as amended? Okay. So we have a motion by Mr. Millar to accept the minutes of July 18th. Do I hear a second for that?
I second that.
Okay. With the change from we have a second by Mr. Spadafore. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, it carries 7-0. Mrs. Holmes, and then in the discussion, the minutes for this meeting will reflect the discussion we had and Mrs. Botwin's concerns about those things. Okay. All right. Okay. Next on the agenda, we have a presentation by the San Luis Obispo County Regional Rideshare Program. And I believe this is Jessica Berry?
Yes, that's
welcome.
Right. Thank you. My name is Jessica Berry. I'm the Bicycle Programs Coordinator for SLO Regional Rideshare. I'm also a member of the board of the San Luis Obispo County Bicycle Coalition. And Nan, who's here with me, is also on the board, and she's a public health nurse. But I'm here today just to tell you about a school law enforcement groups put on assemblies. Hawthorne Elementary School is hosting the bike rodeo this year, and we think that's wonderful. These are all really good programs. Implementing a Safe Routes to Schools program or supplementing the programs that already exist with a Safe Routes to Schools program could make these existing programs more beneficial and can also help reduce the madness that ensues when parents drop off their kids in the morning. So this training is happening Wednesday, October 18th from 9 to 1 at Meadow Park. I gave Kim Holmes some flyers and she'll pass them around to everyone. It's free and it's limited. It's capped at about 35 because more than that we can't get a lot of information shared, but it does require RSVP. So if you're interested in registering for it, you can contact me. We have a website, and I'll tell you what it is because I forgot to put it on the flyer. It's slowbikelane.org/schools, or you can just go to Slow Bike Lane, which is the Bike Coalition's website, and it'll take you there. SLO, that's a good idea. SLOBIKELANE.org. Sure. So participants in the training will learn ways to bring the Safe Routes to School program to their school or to schools around the county. They'll gain skills to organize events or promote bike safety, working with city officials to improve the infrastructure around the school. It's really going to be catered to the people who choose to come. It's a wonderful thing that we have. We get to work with her. She doesn't have a program that she just drops into a county. She'll bring what we need her to provide for us. So I've brought the information, and if you want more information, you can contact me. But I am also taking questions if you have any questions right now.
Does anyone have any questions? Each school would send a participant or two, mm-hmm. and then they'd learn how to advocate for safe bike routes?
Right. And people can sign up generally, too. The people that are signed up right now are more bike advocates in the community that are interested in learning more. But there's a principal in Atascadero that signed up. It just depends. Different schools are going to have different issues and have different people that they can send or not send. And we just want to... we just want to put this information out there. Rideshare will also provide resources after the training to help those people who are interested in moving things forward in their school. Does that answer your question?
Please.
What? That's a problem. If it's crossings, that's also an issue that we look at and try to brainstorm ways to fix that problem at that school, because you know it's going to be different everywhere.
I hope you get some folks from Los Osos, because you know the streets in Los Osos are pretty wild. No sidewalks and stuff.
Right.
Any other questions or comments? And so what you're doing is you're putting this out to the principals in the schools, and then hoping people will participate.
Right.
And again, what's the time and date on that, please?
It is Wednesday, October 18th from 9 to 1. It's at Meadow Park in that facility that's there in the park.
Okay. And your phone number, please?
My phone number is 781-1385.
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
And then moving on to correspondence. And the board did receive a letter dated June 19th from Wendy Craig and Jan O'Mara regarding class size and combination classes. The board received via email a note from Jennifer Best regarding a book she's written on San Luis Obispo. And then the board also received correspondence from Mrs. Carrie Burton regarding Del Mar School. Moving along to public comment. This time, anybody can speak to the board about an item that relates to the school district? Please. Sure, absolutely.
Just for general knowledge, when we get letters as board members, what happens next? I mean, do our board members, just so people know, and if you write to us, I mean, what can they expect from us? Are we supposed to, discuss this at some point, see if we want to put it on agenda, or our board members call them back individually or email them, or just so people know, what happens if you write to the school board about something? I don't know, that's kind of just a general question, but...
I can tell you how I handle it. When someone writes to me individually, I will typically write them back and thank them for writing to us and invite them to come to a board meeting to discuss these things with us. Sometimes I refer things to Dr. Valentine to respond to if it's specific questions about decisions the board has made or things that are facing the board, things like that. I would refer them to Dr. Valentine.
Which is the one about combination classes. We wouldn't be able to really discuss this if it's not on the agenda, right? Mm-hmm. Like tonight. If we wanted to talk about combination classes, that would have to be something we would put on an agenda in the future, mm-hmm. and then we would discuss it.
That's correct.
Yes.
Mr. Spadino?
That's assuming that our previous discussions of class combination classes weren't sufficient to have covered the topic for the board.
Mm-hmm. What was that?
That's assuming that the previous discussions that we've had on combination classes almost every year at the beginning of the school year did not essentially handle this topic for the board.
Yeah, we might not want to put it on.
Yeah.
John and I was just going to add that the two authors of this letter asked that this be considered in the future if there's funding issues or a related matter, so I think they're just bringing it to our attention right now. But I think there's different situations where something may be put on an agenda because it's of such a nature that that's the best way to approach it, or somebody may request that too from the public that it be considered for an agenda item. But this is just being placed here to discuss in the future if it comes up.
And I think specifically for this piece of correspondence, because we've already pretty much built the budget for this year, a discussion about class sizes, I would see, would be a discussion we'd want to have within the nature of our budget building process, probably starting about April, something like that. Okay. Is there anybody from the public who would like to address the board at this point? That's either you can address us on an item that is before, will be coming before the board, or an item that is related to something at the school that is related to the business of the school district. Okay.
We have a staff report.
We're not
This is still school reports, and I had one too. If I could lead off.
We're not there.
Well, I beg your pardon.
I'm going to close public comment.
Could we speed things up a little bit?
I'm trying. I'm going to close public comment, and we'll move on to reports by school staff. Dr. Valentine.
Thank you. Pardon me for being out of line. I wanted to introduce to the board a couple of new members of our family that's joined the administrative team, and related to topics of, I think, particular interest to the board. And if I might, I want to welcome to the school district first brought forward through the board in the strategic planning process. We welcome Cynthia and her talents to the school district. Thank you for being here. And secondly, as we know, Pacheco Elementary School is starting a new era with a new principal this year. And I'd like to introduce to the board Mr. Rick Mayfield. Let's give Rick a welcome. And once again, Santa Maria Bonita's loss is our gain. Rick comes to us as a principal from the Santa Maria Bonita School District. He joins Pacheco Elementary School, and if there's any poetic justice in this, Rick started at Pacheco Elementary School as a bilingual teacher, got his administrative credential, went to Santa Maria Bonita, served as an assistant principal, and then as a principal, and has made full circuit back to the principalship at Pacheco. Rick is fully bilingual, and his talents will be very well received and already have been very well received at Pacheco Elementary School. So welcome, Rick. We're glad you're with us.
Great. Anything else, Dr. Valentine?
There are other reports, but they aren't mine.
Other staff members who would like to make a report? I see lots of staff folks out here.
Yeah.
Rose. You can pull that mic down if you want.
I'm going to try. It's going to have to come a little lower later. I'm Rose Fowler, the counselor at Del Mar Elementary School, the distinguished school on the coast. I want to tell the board about another award bestowed on students and staff at Del Mar this summer. But first, a little history about the Estero Bay Youth Coalition, which you may not be familiar with. It's also known as EBYC. In 2000, when I became a counselor at Morrow Elementary, I was told about the Estero Bay Youth Coalition, which encompasses Los Osos, Baywood, and Morrow Bay. Even though it wasn't a job requirement, it was suggested that I attend the monthly meetings on my own time to establish a relationship with the community. I didn't always make it to the meetings, but I was always welcomed. I was asked to give a report about what was happening in the school district and what help EBYC could provide to our students. Two of the ways Estero Bay Youth Coalition has provided a direct benefit to the students in the district at all levels has been their generous financial support of our sixth grade challenge day for Del Mar and Baywood for the past 5 years. Last year they helped fund the Every 15 Minutes program that was presented by students at Morro Bay High School at the students' request. The mission of EBYC is to spring of 2005. Morro Bay Recreation and Parks was no longer able to provide personnel to host or run the Estero Bay Youth Coalition meetings. I remember one meeting where there were just three of us, including Elisa Ligon from the Prevention Alliance, sitting at the table wondering how we could keep Estero Bay Youth Coalition alive. I suggested, for very selfish reasons, that the meeting should be moved to Del Mar at 7:30 in the morning. Dawn gave permission for us to hold the meetings there and agreed to have the doors open for everyone. I asked Marianne Britton, who facilitated the student council, if she thought maybe some of the student council officers would be willing to come to a morning meeting. Being the mother of the president of the student council, I thought I had a sure thing. She graciously agreed and provided transportation for several of the officers. Susie Correa, the DARE officer, was able to get a few students from the high school to come to the meetings. It began to snowball from there. Previous high school students, now attending Cuesta and Cal Poly, agreed to attend. Department of Social Services was willing to send a representative. At a meeting in the fall of 2005, Department of Social Services asked for our help with their annual toy drive for the holidays. Our student council thought up a contest to get students to donate more toys when it looked like we wouldn't have very many for the needy children. Other students were invited to come to the meetings as well. The attendance grew so much that we expanded from the conference room to the teacher's lounge. In spring 2006, Del Mar did a beach cleanup at the guidance of Mr. Guy Krebb, another award-winning teacher at Del Mar. The students saw how many cigarette butts were left on the beach. Trina Long from Tobacco Control came and spoke to the Estero Bay Youth Coalition. There were at least 20 people at the meeting at that time, including Commander Olivos from the Morro Bay Police Department and Roger Anderson, a former mayor, as well as Elisa Ligon, who is the Prevention Alliance coordinator. The students had strong feelings about their personal experiences with cigarettes and wanted to do something about it. It was suggested that we invite Mayor Janice Peters to our next EBYC meeting. And I'm going to call up a couple of students right now so they can tell you what happened at that meeting. Alex Britton, who is the president of our student council. Would you come up and read your papers? I'm also going to ask Chessie Todd to come up, and we have Kendall Schimmer, too, who is here present. Okay. Go ahead, Alex.
We made a survey, talked to all the classes, and calculated the results. We presented our information to the mayor.
It might be little, but what we think does matter.
That's our youth represented there, which I'm very proud of. They are future leaders of our community and our world. Going on to the award, San Luis Obispo County is divided up into 9 youth coalitions, one of which is Estero Bay. Each year, the Prevention Alliance holds an awards ceremony to recognize outstanding youth and adults for their contributions to the community. This year, the student body and representatives to the Estero Bay Youth Coalition were recognized at the awards ceremony held August 17th for their efforts to provide future generations with smoke-free beaches in Morro Bay. These leaders included Alex Britton, Amelia Gaycad, Kendall Schimmer, Gwen Birch, Casey Chafee, Jordan Smith, Cordelia Boyce, Samantha Eberline, Chassie Todd, Jennifer Bresca, Philip Nordis, Abby Lanini, Vicente Flores, and Shannon Durham. They represent a great group of students in San Luis Coastal. Everyone was invited to free tours of the Charles Paddock Zoo and a delicious dinner at the Atascadero Lake Pavilion. It was a very elegant event. They were each giving certificates of recognition from Senator Abel Maldonado. Do you want to come back up again? Alex? The certificates looked like this. This one is the one for us. Yeah, there's one. Okay. Senator Abel Maldonado, Assemblyman Sam Blakesley signed a certificate as well, and the county of San Luis Obispo signed a certificate by all the county supervisors. They also provided all of us with lapel pins with giraffes on them, recognizing that we went above and beyond to help youth and families in their community. Don Schellenberger, Marianne Britton, and myself were also recognized as Adult Volunteers of the Year for Estero Bay Youth Coalition, and we got personal certificates as well. All the students received similar copies of this. But wait, there's still more. The certificates that you're seeing are actually to the Youth Coalition. In addition to the coalition awards listed above for our Youth Coalition, the Prevention Alliance chooses one Youth Coalition that has done an outstanding job for the year. The EBYC was called up again to be recognized as the outstanding Youth Coalition in all of San Luis Obispo County for 2000. And thank you for the opportunity to share this information with you. EBC isn't written in any of our job descriptions, but it truly makes a difference in our community and our youth. I'm grateful for the opportunity the EBYC provides for us adults to recognize and call forward the gifts we have in our community, also known as our youth. And I wanted to also recognize Elisa Ligon, who is our Prevention Alliance coordinator, that has kind of kept this going when there was nobody else there, and she brings the agendas and holds the meetings and is a great asset to our community. Thank you. Yeah.
And I would also like to point out that Marianne Britton is here as well. Thank you very much, Marianne.
This is some really good news from Del Mar, yeah. Okay? And I just want to tell you that the synergy at our school to make this happen was just fantastic. And without Marianne Britton and Rose Fowler and Elisa, we never could have done this. And they were able to mobilize the kids. They had the arena. And the kids just really got inspired. And I told them from the very beginning, and this is a quote my wife always uses, and it's that be the change that you want to see. And I tried to explain that to the kids, and they understood it, and they said, yeah, we can make a difference. And they went to the city council at a number of meetings. They talked to the mayor. They talked to Roger Anderson. They talked to the police chief. They did everything that a good group of citizens could do to mobilize their resources and the talent pool in the community of Morro Bay. And we're very, very proud of them. And they made a mark on history. I mean, this is really a fantastic mark on history. It's the first beach in Central California that's smoke-free. And not only that, but they did a lot of other things, too. So I'm really proud of them, and I know you are, too. And I know that you wanted to hear about this. Yeah. So that's why we're here tonight. So.
One final comment. These children are so inspiring. The people in Pismo Beach had wanted to have a smoke-free beach. They're really inspired to say, now, how did they do that, and how can we use them as consultants? And so we may be networking with Pismo in the future to get a smoke-free beach down there as well. So these are movers and shakers in front of you right here.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Will Jones, principal of San Luis Obispo High School, and I was fortunate enough to be able to attend the same award ceremony for the County Alliance Prevention. And students at San Luis Obispo were also recognized for their efforts by the San Luis Obispo Youth Coalition, which is under the auspices of the Mayor's Youth Task Force. And they were recognized for the efforts they made in organizing the Every 15 Minutes program at San Luis Obispo High School. And I want to mention the names of those students who were honored, and many of them were actually able to attend the ceremony as well. The students were Allie Andreen, Teresa Miller, Christina Perez, Catherine Nugent, Wildy Rosenblatt, Alex Iverson, Sarah Hufker, and Elise Patrick. These young people from San Luis Obispo High School took on the challenge of organizing Every 15 Minutes program for their school in May. Every 15 Minutes is a two-day program focusing on high school juniors and seniors, which challenges them to think about drinking, driving, personal safety, the responsibility of making mature decisions, and the impact their decisions have on family, friends, and many others. This powerful program is designed to create awareness among students that they are not invincible. This program helps open the emotional doors, and it addresses a problem most teens do not know exists. They experience firsthand how their actions affect the lives of so many other people. These young people spend countless hours organizing this powerful program so that their peers would think twice about drinking and driving. And the reason why those young people aren't here tonight is because they were all seniors and they are all on their way to college. And so I want to thank them and congratulate them for their efforts. And I also had the good fortune to be recognized by the coalition as the adult of the year for the service I've provided to the community in relation to. Thank you. Last year at San Luis Obispo High School, in addition to the Every 15 Minutes program, we also participated, and I participated in the town hall meeting on underage drinking, and we also have brought in Keith Hawkins, our speaker, who was there to talk about bullying or respect for other people, but it also sent a strong message about alcohol and drug use and abuse. And then, of course, we have our annual 24-hour relay. So we've tried to create an atmosphere at San Luis Obispo High School where the idea of prevention is a welcome idea, that we do everything we can to help our students make good decisions about alcohol and drugs. And after an arduous 18 months of self-study, so whew, what a relief, and we'll go on. We came out of that with an outstanding plan that will serve as our school improvement plan for the next 6 years, and today we had a full day of staff development based on two of the goals that came out of that WASC process. And so I want to thank everybody at the school, particularly Scott Nairn, who was the chair of our self-study committee, the parents, the students, all the teachers involved in that process, and thank you, the support for the school board, for your support as we went through that process. Thank you very much.
Thank
We're
you.
Proud.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Other members, other school staff members who would like to make reports?
We just need status with state budget.
Okay, great. All right. Let's move on to item number two.
Well, Chris, can we ask Russell if he wants to fill in at all on status of the budget? Was omitted.
Yeah, sure. Russell, do you want to talk about status of the budget now, or do you want to wait until item number four?
Yeah, we wait.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Item number two is a resolution 010607, delegation of signature authority. Russell.
Thank you. This is a annual resolution we ask you to sign for the renewal of signature authority on our purchase orders and checks.
Move the resolution.
It's been moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mr. Spadafore. Any discussion?
Yes.
Mrs. Botland?
Yeah, just one question. Could you tell us, I looked at the list and I looked at it, who's different on that list?
Nobody.
They're all the same? Would you just, in the future, note that the list is the same or these changes have been made? Because I looked at it and thought, wasn't Brad on there for a while?
No.
Okay, that was my thing. Okay, that was the end of the discussion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mrs. Botwin? Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Spadafore?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson?
Aye.
Mr. Peter?
Yes.
Motion passes, or the resolution passes 7-0. We'll move on to action discussion. Item number three, 7-11 committee recommendations on disposition of Toro Creek and Johnson Avenue properties. This will be presented by Mr. Miller.
Thank you. The 7-11 committee, authorized by the board on the Toro Creek property, the recommendation that was a motion voted upon by the committee was to present a recommendation to the board that read, the committee recommends the best use of the Toro Creek property is to sell the property to the highest bidder. Simply put, it's basically a cash deal is what they were recommending that the board dispose of the Toro Creek property for. On the Johnson Avenue property, the discussion, as you might imagine, was a little bit more complex and a little bit more detailed and involved, and it had a specific recommendation attached to it with a couple of alternatives. And I'll read the motion that was voted upon by the committee. And it reads, the committee recommends the district prepare the Johnson Avenue property for the highest and best use, considering options in the following order of priority. One, sell the property to create a fund for employee-assisted housing. Two, develop the property for deed-restricted housing. And three, create affordable-by-design housing. I would also like to take a moment to recognize the members of the committee and the time that they put in over three very long meetings, and they did a very diligent job, and the attendance was outstanding, and the participation was great. Dennis Ahern, a local businessman, Damian Barnett, our Director of Instructional Services, Sandy Beck, a teacher from Sinsheimer Elementary School, Mike Cordron, the City of San Luis Obispo Planning Department, Doug Davidson, City Housing Programs Department, Steve Del Martini, local businessman, Mary Jo Devitt, the community member, Will Jones, the principal at San Luis High School, Betsy Kaiser, Parks and Recreation Director, and Brad Parker, Director of Facilities Operations and Transportation, as a non-voting resource member. The cost to implement the board's direction will be allocated from the general fund, and the recommendation is staff recommends the board consider the recommendations of the 2006 7-11 committee and give direction to staff. We do have one member of the committee here, And Mr. Del Martini maybe wants to make a comment or just.
We have Mary Jo Devitt is here.
Mary Jo.
Oh, and Mary Jo is always here. I'm sorry, Mary Jo.
And I was going to say before.
Well, I'm only recognizing the non-staff members. I'm sorry, Mary Jo. I couldn't forget. That was terrible. I'm so sorry.
Surprised we whittled it down to three options out of probably the 10 or 12 that were discussed over the length of the meetings. I do believe that you, with the information that was given us, that you have now maybe an opportunity and a wonderful opportunity to try to help future teachers that are coming into the area. You're going to have a number of teachers that are going to be retiring over the next, you know, 3, 5, 7, 10 years. And I happen to be an owner broker of a couple of real estate offices. I've been in real estate here for 30 years. I certainly understand housing needs. I deal with them on a daily basis. It's very devastating in our area to deal with people that can't purchase homes. And I think what this does is, you know, there's an old slogan, this is a hand and just not a handout. I think there's very, very innovative ways to create employee-assisted housing funds. This is an opportunity to have this fund go on for many, many, many years and help a lot of people. So I think you should take the recommendations that are in front of you to heart, as this was, again, as Mr. Miller has said, something that didn't just happen overnight. We had a lot of discussion. The meetings that were supposed to end right on time often went on a little bit longer just because of the discussions. And I want to really say that the people that were on that committee really took this to heart. This wasn't anything that, you know, we just sat down, had some cookies and some coffee and decided to make a recommendation to you. I think I'll just leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Anybody else from the public wish to speak on this item? Okay, I'm going to go to Mr. Millar first, and then Mrs. Botwin, and then as we go around, other people have comments they'd like to make.
Thank you, Chris. I had a question. Where are we in the process? Didn't we decide we were going to go forward and at least begin the process for preparing the property with the city?
That's the wording of the recommendation from the 7-Eleven committee, is that we take the property to the highest and best use, which would be the MAP and the EIR process.
And we have not.
No, we're waiting the board's direction on that.
Okay. I guess obviously we need more information on staff on the practicality of these three recommendations, and I do want to look at the potential for the employee-assisted housing. I'm unconvinced that this piece of property will get us that far down the road.
Recommendations. And I could make a motion on that the committee recommends the best use of Toro Creek property is to sell the property to the highest bidder. I'll make that as a motion.
This is listed as an action discussion item, and so Mrs. Botwin's suggestion at this point is that we actually split the item into two pieces, which was something I was thinking. See if there's interest in the board on doing that. Is there interest in the board?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then Mrs. Botwin, I think, is making a motion to follow the committee's recommendation on the Toro Creek property.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay. So we have a motion by Mrs. Botwin.
And I'll second that.
Adrian, already seconded. Sorry.
Okay. And I do have.
Why don't we go ahead and do you have comments on the Toro Creek property?
I want to go on the other one, Johnson
Avenue.
Can
we take a vote on this, please, and then we'll move to the other one?
Yes.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second on the Toro Creek property to direct the staff to dispose of the property through a bidding process to the highest bidder. Is that correct? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0.
Mr. President.
Yes, sir.
Just as a point of clarification and information for the board, is what we will do now is that property will be advertised and placed on the market. We will solicit closed sealed bids, and the opening of the bids will be in a public session of the board meeting, at which time we will also ask for any verbal bids that might be present. The verbal bids will have to be 5% greater than the highest sealed bid.
Okay.
So that's the process we use, okay?
Okay.
Okay. So now that we've disposed of the first part of this, Mrs. Botwin, did you want to comment on the Johnson Avenue property?
Yes, I wanted to thank Brad Goodman's a teacher at Morro Bay High School. I wanted to thank him for the information that he has sent us, overwhelmed us with, but I've read every bit of it. And he's doing a gangbusters job of trying to find various tracks that we can look at in terms of how to help the teachers, other states, other communities, and other school systems. Now, looking at the situation on the Johnson Avenue property, I note at the bottom of the committee's recommendation, and as Walter did, we all thank you guys for the time and the effort and the thought that you put into this. The second last sentence of your recommendation, they settled on the above recommendation because it's believed to be a pathway to assist the district in one of the $1,000. And I felt, based on that information, that we should not sell this property at this time. We should just simply put it on the shelf and look at other ways, other avenues. I was particularly interested in our bringing back some of the ones that he recommended, where various states and cities have one of them gives the teacher $10,000 straight off the top to help with their down payment on the house that's forgiven. And there were other things in the packets that we received. And go ahead and look at other ways before we sell this property, which if it's sold, build up, and then it has to go at $650, it's not going to do us or our faculties any good. I also asked that we have on the future agenda looking at the old Pacheco property, just in looking at it in terms of if we wanted to own the property, much like Avila Beach, and allow builders to build apartments. And, you know, there's avenues we haven't taken yet that Brad has suggested in his packets of information. And I just thought that I really don't think we ought to jump into something like this until we get a pretty good idea of where we can jump in and do the most amount of good. Thank you.
Quick point of information for the board in response to Ms. Bowen's concerns. On the Johnson property, it's a process that you're not locked into any final decision in the beginning. It is a process which will take at least 18 months to even get to the point where we have an entitlement attached to it. The entitlement attached to it is certainly not a lost item. It's a value-added piece that will greatly enhance its marketability at any point in the future should you choose to delay the disposition and hold on to it for a while. And if I could be bring forth the idea that what we're looking at in the near future, and that's within 3 years, is a turnover of about 30% of our teaching staff through retirement. And if this is an area of concern for the board in hiring and retaining new teachers, the process is going to take time to get there. And that's one of the reasons why we've brought forth the idea of Johnson Avenue presenting itself as an opportunity for funding. It doesn't lock you into anything except for to go forward and put entitlements on the property.
When we pursue what the 7-Eleven committee has established as the three priorities to allow us to study this further over a period of time, it would be helpful for me if the staff would, for instance, take the assumptions under each of those in terms of how much capital may be made available to determine how the greatest number of staff or employees we could impact by which direction we would follow. In other words, if one choice allows us to help 20, but another may allow us to help 50, it would be helpful to know that. So you could make assumptions about the value of this or the amount that would be developed from some other approach, and then we can determine exactly how many we'll be able to impact for the betterment of the future hiring and retention of our employees.
As a point of information, and also for the board's purposes, it has been an item of topic of conversation between staff. As we go forward, we want to make sure that staff's resources are applied in a manner which would satisfy the board's direction. So what we're asking for tonight is a statement of direction so that we can go forward and start doing those detailed studies that you're asking for and present you with true information.
I have a lot of different ideas about this. I don't like this topic because I like open space and not selling property. So that's just like a personal bias that I come in with it, into it. On the other hand, I also believe in communities making decisions for themselves. And when you have a process like a 7-Eleven committee where all these people, you know, spend time and discuss it and come from other, you know, I think it's important to listen to that. So, you know, that's why I don't like the topic, because I have conflict with my own things, my own way of looking at it, but which includes listening to other people. I'm not convinced, like some of these other voices I'm hearing, that since land is so valuable and remains valuable, unless we had some kind of a disaster at Diablo Canyon or something, it's hard to get rid of it because it's going to keep becoming more and more valuable. And I'm not convinced that the plan where we give a chunk of money to an employee, first of all, that would actually enable them to buy a house in this market. I'm not convinced that it would. An apartment. And I think this is a very tough thing to face in our society, that property ownership and owning your own home, you know, this American dream thing, may be something that's changing. And I'm not either convinced that we're going to have trouble attracting teachers. I don't think that we will, personally. I think that we're always going to have a lot of fabulous people wanting to teach here, no matter if we have this or not. But being a teacher and having kids, you know, that are buying houses, of course we want them to be able to if we can help them. I mean, I think it's a good goal. I just don't know if it's actually realistic, which I'm very sorry about, too. I think that's a sad thing in our society, but that's kind of what I'm seeing.
I think this is a subject that begs a lot of discussion, and the board will have quite a bit of discussion about this. But at this point in time, what we have previously authorized Mr. Miller, Mr. Parker to do is to move forward with the necessary approvals that would get the enhancements and the zonings that would maximize the value of the property as raw land. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And I seem to remember that there was a figure of $350,000 or something of total cost and about 18 months involved in that. And we had authorized you to go forward with that.
What staff wanted to find out for sure was that the board was committed for that process, and expending, you know, $350,000 to $450,000 in 18 months worth of work would require us to do the 7-Eleven committee process, and that's why we bring this forward today. Two things: it's required by EDCO, and we have to do this 7-Eleven process for the disposition of surplus property and the declaration that it's surplus property. And number two is to make sure that we have clear direction from you that you want us to expend these resources to go forward. We never had the actual formal declaration to expend this. It's not part of the budget per se. Is that so far we've brought you concept, and they're like watercolors, okay? So there's broad brush concept. As we develop the three different ideas that are part of this recommendation, should you direct us to do so, we will then bring you back a lot more detail about what this process is going to entail and look like on a regular basis.
Okay, thank you.
So just to clarify one point, we wouldn't be moving to direct you to spend that money today. There would be further discussion about that right after.
If you want to,
I'm sorry. I hear myself just fine. the recommendation is to prepare the property for best and future use. That would imply that you are authorizing us to spend, it's an estimate of about $450,000 in 18 months worth of work to put entitlements on the property.
Okay, so ultimately, though, if we decided not to dispose of the property, then that would have been money that could have been spent somewhere else, right? If we decided to keep it for district uses. Yeah.
If you decide to keep it for school uses,
right,
then that is money spent that couldn't have been used for other purposes, correct?
Okay, good. I'm a big supporter of doing something to help teachers and staff, too. Although I agree with Adrian's comments that we may be in a world now where, you know, the American dream and affordable homes for everybody is just not possible in this area. In fact, I think we're a little bit of an anomaly here in the U.S., having lived in Europe and other places where, you know, home ownership is not the norm. I think we may, you know, ultimately have to accept that as a model for teachers. It's unfortunate, but I think we may be facing that situation. The one concern I had, and it really stems from having read some of the prep material that was sent out to us in the Friday packet, was about the demographic study that we all received about declining enrollment in certain parts of our district and potentially increasing enrollment in other areas. And the only question I had was about significant enrollment increase expected, for example, at Hawthorne School. Do we have the capacity within our school district as the Margarita Plan and the Orchid Plans are built out to accommodate those additional students over the next 10 to 20 years? And if not, would this site here, the Johnson site, potentially be a site for, you know, expansion?
Well, it's a two-part question. The bulk classrooms onto the sites to accommodate additional enrollment in the south end of town. And the answer is probably yes, we could, but we'd have to see what the impact on the schools were and what size the schools were and whether the board was in agreement with that particular philosophy of schools. And the third piece is to actually take advantage of a school site in the Orchid development, which is there, and build a school in the south end of town and not have the transportation relocation issue. So those are all discussions that the board would have to deal with. The second piece of the question is that the Johnson Avenue property would not be a solution in any of those scenarios, I don't think.
And any money that we would derive from the sale of Johnson Avenue, while it could be used for a new school site in the Orchid development, for instance, should we choose that route to go, we would have sufficient funds from our current developer fees being charged for development and future developer fees being earned from Orchid Margarita developments also. And in any kind of agreements that we could negotiate with the developer of Orchid and Margarita about the impact of their homes on our school district.
Just a quick follow-up then. Causing me to think of another question. If we were to sell the property, would those funds be dedicated then for a use to help teachers with affordable housing as opposed to just going into the general fund?
Board, absolutely. Okay. I mean, first of all, the sale of property you can't use in the general fund.
Okay.
It basically has to go into a facilities type arrangement. And the way that we would use it for employee-assisted housing is we would be partners in the purchase of capital property with these funds, and that's how we would satisfy the requirement of the law.
If that were the option that we decided.
If that were the option you decide to go after,
great.
Yes.
Thanks.
Ms. Botland and then Mr. Malone.
Okay. I think at this point in time, I feel like we're maybe moving just a little bit too quickly. The options for the Johnson Avenue were sell the property, create a fund, develop the property for deed-restricted housing, create affordable by design housing. And I think, if I'm hearing correctly, I know I am feeling not indecisive about where we're going and how we're going to get there, if we even want to get involved in this kind of thing. And at this point in time, to spend approximately $450,000 outlay about potentially going that way, it would seem to me that I think that the money can be used if we need an idea. But to put something like that right in the middle of this campus, when we have that campus isolated over there by Cal Poly, not in the middle of a high school campus. The whole thing at this point in time, I feel like we should slow down and look at some of the items that Brad has brought up and go try different avenues before we make a decision and spend that amount of money.
Walter?
As I understand, the current situation is the property is not marketable until we take steps as far as permitting and in the city. Am I on? You can hear Mr. Miller. You just can't hear Mr. Millar. The property is in the state it's in right now is not marketable and not desirable to a developer or buyer.
Well, actually, it probably could be, but it certainly wouldn't be in our best interest monetarily to sell it in its current condition.
And I guess what I'm concerned about is that if we're going to be using surplus property to try to do things for students that are currently enrolled and are going to be enrolled, which I believe is our obligation, regardless of personal biases, we should explore. I'm hoping that we can do preliminary exploration that does not commit us immediately to $450,000 in 18 months. Among the things I would like to know is what are some realistic density usages. I saw the table. That doesn't tell me much. I guess what I would be looking for is some upfront inputs as to what that potential best use, either under either of the scenarios that are recommended, what that represents. And I don't want to walk past it because otherwise that piece of property just sits there and doesn't do any good for any students or anybody.
Can I be assured, the board needs to be assured that the staff would not go 18 months without checking in on our progress and development of ideas, that this would be a regular reporting process in your board meetings, in open session, about the information that we're discovering, with probably one or two special study sessions to develop the ideas even further. The initial stages we've kind of taken care of in our meetings with Oasis Landscaping. Then the next step is to start having conversations, for instance, with the city about its impacts
spending $450,000 on what may turn out to be not a very good idea.
I don't think that would be prudent for staff to do to the board.
Good. So I think what the direction to staff should be is to begin some of these preliminary analyses, and if we want to maybe get some variety packet information or even some presentation at another meeting as to what those costs and steps look like so we can develop our own comfort level. I mean, we can set up a schedule of how we proceed in this. We don't want to micromanage staff, but we can reassure ourselves that we're not committing to some huge chunk of change that ultimately may not benefit our students, yet it allows us to explore the potential of one of the district assets that I believe we have a responsibility to explore whether or not it will benefit our students.
I think what Walt's saying is helpful, and taking a step backward may also be helpful. The options that Brad Parker discussed in his memo involve having a capital fund available to implement different types of programs. Tonight, we have two pieces of property that have gone through the 7-11 process. One we've decided, Toro Creek. The other is the Johnson property. That's what's in front of us right now. If the board has a question which is justifiable as to what expenses will have to be incurred to get it at a point where it is at its highest and best value, then I think that would be one thing to bring back to the board, is what are those costs, exactly how much are they, and what's involved. That's information, because no vote will be taken tonight. Second thing is what I had mentioned earlier, is if you assume it's at its highest and best value, and if you did sell it and you had X number of dollars, what would that accomplish in terms of personnel, staff, and future planning for that kind of a fund related to the different programs that Brad had discussed in his memo? That's number two. Number three, if you do something else that the 7-Eleven committee had discussed in terms of deed restricted and other types of construction there, what would that provide to the district in terms of options in that regard and number of employees it may impact? So tonight, I think a lot of the discussion is premature until those items would be covered, and we can look at the cost. We can decide if we want to expend $350,000 to $450,000 to get to that point to begin with, and then what it would bring us if we did get to that point, which is what you're saying, Walt.
I understand.
Okay.
I understand that, but what I'm hearing from other people is maybe there are other alternatives for the value that the property represents to the school district. We have said, and what I thought I heard people say was, there might be other alternatives for the recognizing that property, the funds we would derive out of that property are restricted, that there might be other things aside from employee-assisted housing that we might decide are better uses of that money. I'm pretty sure that's what I heard folks talking about in terms of, do we even want to look at an elementary school down in the Margarita area if and when that time comes? What's the impact going to be of the growth that we're going to be talking about on Hawthorne School? The piece of property represents a value to us, and I do think the first question and what we're kind of talking about is, by selling the property, do we derive a value that we can use for something, and is now the time we want to do that? And if that's what we're thinking, then do we go ahead and explore the enhancements, the rezoning and things like that we're talking about? So, and I think what I'm hearing the board say is, we need more information. I'm not feeling like anybody's real comfortable with it, with this making a decision on this right now. Am I kind of reading the board correctly?
Yes.
Okay. And so what kinds of information does the board want back, I think, is the question you're going to need to get answered, ultimately leading us to the discussion of, do we sell the property, and then what do we do with the money if we sell the property?
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah, please.
If we sell the property, it has to go into purchasing other property. It can't go into helping them with high rents in the area or something like that. It has to be purchasing property, correct?
Yeah, it can't be used for operational needs such as salaries and benefits and books and supplies.
So that would kind of be like a benefit if you had a bonus that helped you pay your rent or something? No,
probably not. It probably wouldn't be available for that particular use.
It wouldn't be available. I'm just curious.
The only thing I think I would add to that is that we do make general fund contributions to certain things that these dollars could go toward. And if they did go toward those things, the general fund dollars would be liberated and usable for the kinds of things you're talking about. To make certain decisions, and Chris too for that matter, is going to have to make certain decisions about whether this property, if we were to sell this property, whether this property should go simply to the highest value we can, which may involve putting very high-end houses on the property and selling them for the maximum amount of dollars. I'm making up a scenario. Or does the board have a philosophical commitment to certain kinds of affordable housing, whether it's deed-restricted affordable housing or whether it's affordable by design housing? And it may be that those kinds of purposes generate less revenue for the school district than the more expansive projects do. Philosophical decision. You're going to need information in order to know how much difference and how much affordable housing would you be generating. A variety of information that you would have to have. Chris's notion of, do we want to sell because we believe this is a valuable property and it's not doing anything for kids at the moment, and we do want to generate the funds that will do something for kids, and we're not ready to say what exactly that is. That's another conversation for the board to have. The third one is, do we not want to sell at all, which would mean, do we want to sit on the property and let it accrue value and sell it at some later date if that's what the board's interest in, or use it for some purpose at some later date if that's the board's interest? And I think those are the things that staff is hearing you want researched and brought back to you, and those are the things we would bring back to you.
Yeah, is that sounding like the consensus of the board, what we're thinking?
And I think we do need to recognize, though, that from my perspective, that we did have a 7-Eleven committee meetings, and the 7-Eleven committee did work hard to make recommendations, and the recommendations are fairly clear. But I think that as a board, we have an obligation to look at these things further. This is Botwin, and then we'll see if anybody else wants to report.
Yeah, Peter made a comment earlier, Chris, that was really good. What? I'm sorry, David. David made a comment. He said, you know, I'd like to walk through the property that we're talking about here on the Johnson Avenue. And I would, too, because I can look at these pictures and I can visualize this. It's not very clear. And it would be neat at our next meeting here if we met 5 minutes earlier and walked through, somebody took us on a tour through the property, where it ends and how it's going to affect the parking lot and the driveway to and from the street and all the other things, how high the buildings are going to be, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that should be something that should be a part of our final decision, too.
Contact Dr. Valentine or Russell, and any individual board member could do that. And then I think if the board decided that we wanted to take a board walk through that.
Yeah.
We could certainly do that. But I guess my question is, do you have enough information, and do you feel like you have the questions that you think the board is asking so that you can come back with the answers you think we're looking for? Okay. do you want to handle it? Do you want to come up with what you thought you heard our questions were? Check that out with the board, and then we'll move on from there.
Dr. Valentine stated them very well, and I'm happy to live with that if you are. I think that the process now will be to provide you with some background details and revisit what we've done in closed session with Oasis Landscaping in the past. That'll be the starting point. And we will, you know, resurface a lot of that discussion and develop some timelines and some cost studies about the process. Okay, so it's not about what's going to happen to the property, but the process of deciding what's going to happen to the property. There'll be some costs involved in that, and we'll present a budget for that and an estimated timeline about how it's going to look, let's say, over the next 6 months.
Just my last comment on this, if I could, is that the minimum that I want to know is what is our best estimate of the maximum dollars we can get out of this property.
I understand.
And you know, we can always use facilities dollars, and if you know, for no other reason, take a look at San Luis Obispo High School. I mean, we got things we're going to be taking care of in this school district, and before we start making philosophical decisions, I want to know what we're walking away from.
So, again, getting back to my original question, do you feel that you have the questions that the board would like answered well clarified enough to come back and present things to us aside from the process issues?
Can I play back what I think I'm hearing? In no particular order, we have three different selling scenarios that are listed here. One is just to get the best price available. Two is to look at the idea of deed-restricted housing. The other is to look at the notion of affordable by design housing. We want to find out, how much money do we make if we were to go down each of those paths? And then some kind of answer to, and what...
Wasn't there a part about how many teachers would be affected by each scenario?
Yeah, too? What can we do with it would involve describing just that thing.
One final note on this item is that this doesn't necessarily satisfy, by making this move, we're delaying the adoption of the 7-Eleven committee's recommendations or altering them and declaring the property as surplus. So we haven't done that yet. We will bring this one back as you guys feel more comfortable with the information. We've been able to accomplish Toro Creek. Okay, we got that one out of the way. Johnson Avenue is going to require a little more information, and we will continue to provide that. And when you're ready, you might be ready, we'll bring it back for action item.
Okay.
Okay.
Shall we move on then to item number four, which again, Mr. Miller, a summary of the 2006-2007 state education budget.
This one could be almost as difficult. It seems like in times of surplus, we have, you know, a thousand competing ideas, and then in times when we don't have as much funds as we wish, then everybody kind of goes along with the pain, I guess. Tonight is a discussion about the state budget as adopted and signed by the governor. Let me point out a couple of things, first of all, that may be a bit confusing. While the governor has signed the budget and the state has an official budget, there is much detail still missing. The how-to, or how we're going to apply the money, is enclosed in trailer bills. And trailer bills are under debate in the legislature as we speak, with a drop-dead deadline of August 31st. So we expect to have the language, for instance, this secondary counselor's piece. We know that the state is going to allocate however many millions of dollars for that purpose, but we don't know how it's going to get to us and what specific guidelines are going to be attached to it yet. So while the money's going to show up in some form for districts in the state of California, we're not even sure we're going to be eligible for that money based upon whether they put a decile 1-2-3 tag on it, whether they put some ratio tag on it that we've already satisfied. Those kinds of things are left unstated at this time. Excuse me. What we're presenting to you tonight is the basic outline of each program with an estimated per student amount as signed by the governor. So,
Alpha.
Oh, okay. Alpha. And Caroline, too.
Yeah.
I was going to.
Okay, and Walt was going to, and John was thinking about it, and Chris actually had figured it out on his own. So, anyway, as we move forward, in the Arts and Music Block Grant for our district, it's $103,541. Be aware that some of that detail is yet to be decided. Okay. It's basically to hire staff development, and purchase books and materials. We know it must supplement, not supplant, current programs, and funds are to be used for support of Standards Alliance art program. Okay? The second program is art.
So just one quick question. Ongoing, this means it's going to be just that, right? We're going to get it every year to infinity.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes. Yes, it is. It is ongoing.
Okay.
Or until the legislature changes
its mind.
Until they change their mind, yeah.
They're not going to change
it. All programs are ongoing until they're no longer going on.
Right.
Okay. Art, music, and PE equipment block grant. It's a one-time allocation. It's for the district's use. It's $82 per ADA. And according to your chart, that's nearly $566,000. It'll purchase art, music, PE equipment, and supplies. The third item is PE.
So we can use that to buy new band instruments for the high schools and junior high schools? Excellent.
Yeah.
Art, music, and PE equipment.
Yeah.
Whatever that might be.
Okay.
PE teacher and recruitment grants. It's ongoing funding. This is...
Just a quick follow-up question there.
Yeah.
I'm new in the process here. Where is the discretion applied? So, you know, we have three broad categories there, art, music, and PE, and there's $82. Who ultimately makes that decision? Is it at the board level? Is it at the principal level?
Yeah, we will, as staff, we bring you recommendations based upon what we feel needs are, and you will take input, make your decision, and provide us with direction.
Okay.
I want to pitch the strategic planning process as being the vehicle by which we would bring that to you.
You want to do that now, or did you just do it? Okay. I think that if I might suffer the interruption one more time, and Ed brings up a point that I was going to tie things together with at the end, but which is probably timely at the moment. Don't forget, we have a strategic plan. And for that strategic plan to be of any value, it must remain sacrosanct, it must remain inviolate, it must remain our guiding light for how we're spending resources in the district, no decision of how to apply those funds. And certainly your interests will be represented and discussed and put into the strategic plan product. Ultimately, you are the decision makers of this whole prioritization.
Russell, let me ask a quick question. These monies, which I think ultimately you're going to get to
$1,866,997. Very good. Yes. What math?
I love your tables. They're great.
Oh, okay.
These are not monies that we built into our that were in our budget building process. This is found money, right? so to speak.
Yeah, it is, actually. However, there are some programs we built into our budget.
I understand, and I think that was where Dave was kind of going with his questions. Because of restrictions on some of these categories of funding, we may not be able to apply X number of dollars to the strategic plan to add back this program, because it may be apples and oranges. But these dollars are dollars we can figure out where to put in our budget because we didn't count on them.
Yes.
Okay.
We will continue that discussion. We certainly have that at the first interim and second interim, which are coming up in the near future. Did you want to say anything?
Well, when the restriction comes in that you have to supplement and not supplant, it means you can't replace what you're already doing with these dollars. You have to add to it. If you look at the music staffing, it has that restriction on it. But one of the distinctions that we've made is that our music program, for instance, has been funded for 1 year as essentially a training, another year, it's actually the second year, but 1 year at a time as a training program for elementary teachers. If we were to convert that to an ongoing program, which is an interest the board has expressed, we do not believe that that would be considered supplementing, but in fact, supplanting, it would be considered supplementing our program. And we could use this, yeah.
Yeah.
We're gonna face some similar analysis pretty much as we go down through these categories and figure out where to use the money.
Correct. Much of the analysis can't be done until after the trader bills are accomplished, so that we're not wasting time making decisions that end up being illegal or undoable. Okay, third item, teacher recruitment grants. This is a very unusual kind of grant in that there's going to be some lottery process instituted where there will be about 1,100 schools allocated $35,000 each. And it's a bit of a mystery yet about how that's sourced. It's a it's an idea whose time has come. The money is allocated, but the details of it are a bit sketchy at this time. It's for district use. It's $80 per grade, 7-12. It's about $300,000. It'll increase the counselor-to-student ratio, or decrease it, actually, I think, is what the proper use would be. It's ongoing, and the counselors must do a number of tasks in order to keep the money coming. So right now, that one's a wait and see, because the language is all important about how they're going to pick the districts that get the money. Career Tech Equipment and Supplies, it's money for the district, it's one time, it's $15 per grades 7-12 enrollment, so it's only for the secondary school's enrollment, and it's to purchase materials for Career Tech classes, and the amount is about $56,000. EL Professional Development fits very nicely with our strategic plan and the priorities that we've chosen to fund this year. Yeah. It's money for the district. It'll fund $2,500 per EL teacher, about six teachers in total for our district, and it'll provide AB 466 like training for teachers of English learners. It's a staff development kind of program. Instructional materials, the next program is Instructional Materials Library and EdTech Block Grants. It's a money for the district. It's one time. It's $15 per pupil. It is about $109,000, and it's to purchase instructional materials. The EIA program, it's a long-standing, born-in-tradition kind of program that is a program to develop educational opportunities for the lower socioeconomic status students. It has a history of being very valuable to districts in developing certain EL programs and other things. This year, the legislature decided to enhance that program tremendously. And they decided to do that because Title I funding from the federal level was decreased in some districts dramatically. In our district, we're going to have a $40,000 shortfall estimated in Title I funding from last year to this year. That remains to be seen in terms of specificity, but we expect it to be somewhere around $40,000. The EIA language, and that's the designed purpose of the additional money. After that, it becomes an item of discussion about the remaining, how the board would like to approach the students that it's targeted to help. So we'll have that discussion, too, as we go along. The next item is after-school education and safety. This is another one where we have no substantive details about what the program looks like. It remains to be seen. And then for the school sites, the absolute biggie is the one-time discretionary block grants. And it's divided between district and site. For the district, we get $19 per CBEDS. And for the sites, they'll get $56 per CBEDS. The amounts are $138,000 for the district, and it ranges from $3,000 for Pacific Beach up to $23,000 for C.L. Smith, Baywood, $26,000 for Pacheco. So there's some substantial monies that are one-time allocated to the schools to be decided by their school site council with approvals by the board. So it'll be a very interesting process for the school sites to do that. This is by far the centerpiece of the state budget, education-wise.
Russell, I just noticed for some of the items you used per ADA, yeah. And then for these last couple of items, it's been per pupil. Is there a distinction between per pupil and ADA?
There is a distinction, but I don't know why they did it. It comes from the legislature. I suppose that the district piece is a lot of ADA stuff. Okay, so 0506 ADA is known. They can calculate exactly what that is. The 06-07 CBEDS is not known until October, and those they use at the site a lot.
Well, it's just it isn't per pupil, like how many are enrolled in ADAs, how many bottoms are in the seat? Like
on a daily basis.
On a daily basis.
Yes.
So
an average daily attendance of, you know, bottoms in the seat.
Russell, I was for you and Ed, how do you foresee this being integrated into our discussions this year relative to budget? And is this going to fold into the strategic planning study session in any way?
Yeah.
I think, if I may, I think we need to take each category item by item and go to the constituency that is going on a shopping spree. I think we need to think very, very deliberately about what are the needs and what are the priorities of the needs, and then spend the money deliberately.
The after-school education safety, I'm assuming that's the Prop 49 that they're talking about? Is that the Prop 49? I believe it's Proposition 49 monies, the after-school and before school.
No, it's actually different.
Okay.
It's not. It's something different than Prop 49.
I don't know if this is an advanced agenda item. At some point, will we be talking about the impact of Proposition 49 on the district and what our plans are for the Proposition 49?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
One more quick point, and that's the special ed funding. Special ed is of great interest in how it arrives in the district, and over the years there's been different sources and different people rating the dollars, but in the recent past, the federal government is giving its IDEA money to us, and the state has glommed onto it and used the Fed money to pay the state portion of its requirement to districts. There was a lawsuit, and the outcome of the lawsuit was state had to pay its own fair share, and the federal money was to be passed through in total to the districts. But there was no allocation for COLA and growth in terms of the lawsuit. So now what's going on is that we're suffering what they call a bifurcated COLA, in that the state is allocated money. I know it kind of hurts, huh?
Yeah.
The state allocates the money for COLA and growth, but the feds didn't. And so if we look at our funding, and I'm not quite sure of the division, but assume that there's 50% state money, 50% Fed dollars in there, then the effect of our bifurcated COLA is that we're only getting about a 2.9% increase in our total funding for special ed. But we're giving a 5.6% increase in wages. We're suffering other legal costs and stuff like that. Our funding is going up a little bit, and our expenditures are going up an awful lot. So it's an It's an area of concern that still hasn't been addressed, probably never will, because it's just too expensive for anybody to handle outside of the local area. And we just have to be very, very cognizant of our special ed dollars in our program.
Chris, thank you. How do you believe or how do you feel this can be integrated into not just production of new classes or new programs?
Yeah, I think I'm not sure what the simple answer to that would be, but the process is, first of all, the art consideration is on the future ideas list for strategic planning, so it's already got a parked spot in our focus of if additional money and when additional money comes along, that's one of the items to be considered. I don't think any of the process that we went through even in the past simply was how can we perpetuate what we are doing. I think the orientation is how can we change our delivery system, how can we change the way we serve students to meet needs that we are identifying. And I guess I would recommend that as we look at any topic, and arts would be one of them, but as we look at any topic, the question would be, what are the needs that we see in this particular area for students? What is the vision that we have for this particular area for our students? And then what would it take to get to that vision, and how would this money assist us in doing it?
And one of the things I've gleaned from some of the state committees that I'm on, and understand that I deal with a lot of chief business officials whose primary focus is on dollars. But when the dollars come forth, we all stand up and cheer. But then the implementation of how to spend those dollars becomes the real wrestling match. There are X number of minutes in a day. There are programs absolutely necessary to be delivered in order to achieve the standards that have been passed on to us from the feds to the state. Putting in value-added programs is the challenge. It's the idea of the PE and the music program, if you will. How do you squeeze that into an instructional day when your issue is getting kids to read and write? And you lose that. And we've talked about that a lot in our discussions, but it never was a huge issue because the resources weren't there to address it. Now the state has given us the resources, and we're going to really have to wrestle this problem to the ground. It's going to be an interesting process.
In terms of the standards, one thing that we did establish in the art and music study session was that there are standards that we aren't addressing.
When we look at the number of minutes in the day, that assumes an assumption that we're bound by the minutes of the day. If there are ways to form collaborations with the community that go beyond the school day, or if there are technological ways to expand students' access to curriculum beyond the classroom and beyond the school day, those are things that I think we need to strategically think about. And I shared with the board in the Friday update that we can see that there is a clientele that has a demand for greater flexibility in education than what the traditional classroom and the traditional campus can offer. And there are people that are filling that need. And I think we need to learn from those people and expand the flexibility of our own offering so that we are adjusting with the times and with the clients that we serve rather than holding on to some past image.
Well, thank you very much. I think, again, as you say, the implementation is going to be the key, and thanks. It's going to be interesting to look at this. We'll move on to item number 5, addendum to joint use agreement between the City of San Luis Obispo and San Luis Coastal Unified School District to include extended land lease. Mr. Miller, you're on again.
Thank you. The essence of this is to do an addendum to our current agreement with the city Parks and Rec about the utilization of Schinsheimer Park, the pool. And essentially what they want to do is put in a kiddie pool, and in order to accomplish that, they need to have a certain period of time that they have under control, their control, this property. This recommendation has, as an attachment, the joint use agreement with the strikeouts and the underlines of the additions, but essentially gives the city what they want and provides us with some protections should they not be able to complete or follow through the whole term of the lease.
Okay. Mr. Buckman.
Thank you very much for your time. My name is Mark Buckman. I am currently sitting as a member of the city's Joint Use Commission, and I would ask the board to seriously consider approving this. It will enhance...
Likely to not happen. I think it's something we should support. I did have a question on the park ranger service. Is that an... I don't remember that in the underlying joint use agreement. Is that a new component?
We instituted park ranger service last year.
Well, it was on. I could hear. It was...
the voices you're hearing.
You know, I can't hear much anymore, but I can hear myself anyway. Park Ranger service was utilized sometime at the beginning of last year, I believe. And what they do is they patrol our sites as we designate for them to do, and they make sure that the usages are appropriate, that the people who have organized events have a use permit, that we're getting our insurance coverages and our fees and stuff like that. They have been very valuable in making sure that the conflicts between one group and another group are worked out in a sensible and organized manner. I think that their services have been very, very valuable to us.
Okay, so we do have a track record with them providing the service, and we're satisfied with it.
Yes.
And they are going to hopefully eliminate the adult soccer problem on Laguna's playing fields on Sundays.
I can't promise, but they do monitor the problem.
Okay, well, I'll call. Okay, I call
eliminate
everything.
Is a different deal.
Okay, good. I think it's a good move, and I like the additional security for our sites.
Thank you.
And before Mr. Spadafore, and as I remember, if the city isn't doing this, then that's something we're going to have to do. Is remember when we looked at instituting the fees for the use of our properties, one of the concerns we had was who was going to monitor that and how is that going to be monitored. So if this takes care of that for us, I think it's a good thing.
I would like, if all comments are ended, that the board approve addendum number 2 to joint use agreement between the City of San Luis Obispo, San Luis Coastal Unified School District, dated 12/17/02, to include an extended land lease at Schinsheimer Park for the purpose of developing a children's therapy pool.
We have a motion, and we need a second.
I'll second.
Mr. Peter. And I would like to point out that this is Mr. Peter's first second.
It won't be his last.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Carries 7-0. Moving on to item number 6, board study session protocols. Dr. Valentine.
First, I want to thank the board subcommittee. They did the work that this item particularly reflects. One would be to receive information from in a Friday information letter. 2 would be to put it on an agenda. And 3 would be to have a full-blown with single item agenda study session. And protocols for accomplishing each of those. Put very specifically, anybody can request information in the Friday packet, provided it can be answered in a brief sort of fashion. Board protocol in the past, but it's being sort of codified here, is that if 2 members wish to place something on an agenda, we can place it on the agenda and will. And the third is that in order to dedicate an entire meeting to a single item would take an action by the board. The steps for developing a study session, if the board agrees to go forward with that, are listed in the backup item, and we're prepared to participate in the discussion. The subcommittee is here as well to participate in that discussion.
would like to start, Mrs. Botwin?
I just want to thank the committee. I think they did an excellent job on putting this together. And, of course, Ed gave us a skeleton to work on that made it that much easier. One little change I'd recommend in the first paragraph in the first sentence. It said in the board's self-evaluation meeting on July 18th, the topic of, and I went back over my notes, of information was a central theme. And then, consequently, this is where the study session. So I just wondered if the rest of you remember that. That's what I had in my notes, that we are a major theme. Okay? You think so, too? Just make the change to that. Because all of this comes for our desire to get information. Thank you.
Other members of the subcommittee, Carol and John, do you have any thoughts about this?
No, I think it was information and communication. I would be happy to see that read information slash communication. But not information to the exclusion of communication.
Well, since this whole process is communication, it would seem obvious that, you know, it's our process. The communication is a process for getting the information. But I don't care. If you want to put it there with a slash, go ahead.
Second page, I just wanted to point out for the rest of the board is something that I think the board needs to look at tonight to comment upon. The purpose is to help the board focus on a
more precise, more focused, and directed from the board initially to hopefully have a result that we can follow up with, which is what the bottom part is relative to program, staffing, cost, strategic plan. So that would be something I would be interested in, since I was part of the committee with Caroline and with Marilyn, if the other board members feel that this is a useful work product to help delineate those items.
Well, along those lines, on number 7 on the first page, page 6.1, there's all these steps here, select a topic, et cetera. Number 7 was conduct follow-up summary at a subsequent meeting or in the Friday packet. I kind of would like to cross out or in the Friday packet, because if we do and just have it, if it could be briefly, at a subsequent meeting, because if you are filling out something like this, it seems to me it has to be at the meeting when it's, you know, summarized or...
I'd be willing to add that.
Yeah, I think that's consistent with the idea that the public, I think, would benefit from seeing what next steps are going to occur after a study session, that it should be something as a follow-up to a study session, which is a public meeting. And the other idea was, and this isn't here, was that the clerk of the board, not because I'm the clerk today, but whoever is the clerk would receive this document from all the board members, and then it would be consolidated and merged into one document containing everybody's follow-up questions and recommendations. And then eventually, once that is more defined, then the staff would advise the board, well, if you do this, if this is your wish or this is where you're going to proceed, these are the effects it will have on program, staffing, cost, and the strategic plan.
Which is good. That's
so that was the idea.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to have an opportunity to see how well this works. Is it the next meeting or the meeting after that, Dr. Valentine?
We're talking about the second meeting in October.
So for a study session, or actually what I'm talking about here is using the protocol to develop the statement of the topic, the questions, those sorts of things that would be guiding our study session.
That's right. When we get to the future agenda, I'd like to make a proposal on that.
Okay. Another board member comment. I wanted to thank the subcommittee for this, because for myself and future presidents, I think this will help us guide the meeting. And the first thing I should ask, I suppose, is there anybody from the public who would like to speak to any item on the action consent agenda? And seeing no one, we'll move on through. Item number 7, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Number 8, approval of proposed salary increases for positions exempt from merit system. Number 9, approval of waiver of CASI requirements
for students with disabilities, and that's the high school exit exam. Number 10, acceptance of donations. Number 11, disposition of surplus property. Number 12, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Number 13, approval of purchase orders. Number 14, approval of warrants and payroll. Number 15, destruction of Class 3 disposable records. I'm asking to pull number 16. Number 17, award of bid number 0206, snacks and beverages. Number 18, award of bid number 0208, vehicle fuel. 19, approval of revisions to board policy 5141.33, students with head lice.
Pull, please.
You don't want to scratch that. You want to scratch this one from the consent agenda. Item number 20: approval of Morro Bay High School Agriculture Vocational Education Incentive Grant applications. And item number 21: approval of field trips Morro Bay High School Associated Student Body. Okay.
What's that, 21? Okay.
Very good. So, do we hear? Do I hear
yes.
a motion?
Oh, I'm going to do it, Walter. I'm going to try this.
You're
this is
go
a
for
complex
it. Okay.
process here. If,
okay.
if Mr. Peter can do something first time, I can try this.
Okay.
I make a motion that we approve items 7, 9 through 15, 17 and 18, and 20 from the action consent agenda.
Do I hear a second? Walter's got the second. It's been a motion by Mrs. Dickinson and a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 7-0. Item number 8, Mrs. Botwin.
Okay, and item number 8, the problem to me here is I'm not sure, and Chris, I'm sorry, this is another burden for you.
It's not a burden for me.
I'm not sure that whether we have a policy or past practice or what, but generally, almost always, when we discuss something, we bring it out and discuss it, it goes on the following month's meeting's agenda, and then we vote on it, so that if anybody speaks to us in between or comes up or there's questions about it, that we can deal with it before the final vote. Now, we've just went over this tonight.
Present an item at one meeting and follow it up with the next meeting with knowing that the board can, at its discretion, move an item forward for action. Mr. Millar, you had your mic down.
Well, I mean, I don't have a problem. I agree that our general practice is to bring an item on, have discussion, then bring it back at a subsequent meeting. But there have been plenty of times when we've just made the decision, and part of it is with this item is it's sort of pro forma. We've had plenty of discussions about pay raises and the nature of pay raises, and this is a very small, oddball kind of, perhaps that's the wrong word, unusual. Specific employee groups that basically staff has to. They bring along after we know more about our negotiations with the representative groups. That was inarticulate as heck. But the concern I wish to express is we don't want to become bound by past practices and we're walking past common sense. So so that's the concern that I have. I think this is good that Caroline brought this up, but we don't want to be so rigid that we can't act on things that are pro forma.
I agree with Ms. Botwin on this only because this matter didn't go in front of the Personnel Commission because they aren't classified. I mean, they're not classified employees, and they don't have a bargaining unit that represents them. My sense is I think, which is what Caroline is saying, is that I just think for due process there should be at least an additional opportunity for someone to come forward and say, yes, but... And that opportunity will only allow this to be placed again on the next agenda item, and it'll at least give somebody an opportunity who may not have made it tonight or known about it to come forward and say, I have a question.
Could I make a suggestion on this that maybe will work? I will call for a motion. If no one makes a motion on it, I suspect the item will die, and we can just bring it back the next time. So I would take a motion on this item. Okay, so this item dies for lack of a motion if we could bring it back to the next meeting. Okay? My question on item number 16 was quick, and I asked Mr. Miller at
unfortunately, at the beginning of the meeting. If I look down at Los,
the bid just wasn't important if it didn't get bid on, since it was only 100 slices they were asking for. So with the pricing that we got on the large pizza, we have a much better bid from Big Daddy's on that particular piece. I don't think it was an error. I just don't think that there was anybody who bid on box slices for Los Osos from Big Daddy.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so I guess what we're saying is that in Los, that the pizza for Los Osos, we won't have the box sliced pizza there. We're going to slice up the pizzas in the cafeterias, and that's how
they come sliced. They come sliced. We'll just put them on a napkin or a plate.
Okay. All right. I'll move approval of item number 16.
This comes from the man who is the pizza connoisseur of all time.
I like pizza. I move. I would move for approval of item number 16.
I'll second.
Seconded by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Number 19, and that was pulled by Mr. Spatafor.
The only reason I pulled it is because I thought there were a couple of words in the new policy, the change.
Are you going to be nitpicking this?
I knew you were going to do that.
I did that one.
I knew you were going to do this. We'll take a few minutes to allow these comments to be fully aired. Anybody else? The use of the word where it says excluded students may return to school when a parent or guardian verifies treatment isn't very clear. And the use of the word usually, and I'm trying to remember where that is here. There's some place where the word usually is used, and I didn't mark it. Is not specific.
Okay.
And I apologize for not marking the usually, but it's here somewhere. Oh, it's the one in the description of the item.
Okay.
Where it says, it's an understanding on the first page. It says, parents are usually to contact the school by phone rather than a note. And I just think it's kind of non-specific, that's all. If it's going to be directed, it should be real clear what they're supposed to do. That's all.
Okay, so
by note or phone.
Okay, so that, just to make that specific.
So is the recommendation to bring this back with some minor modifications?
Well, you know where it says. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to ask a clarify. If
okay.
Do we
okay with that? Okay. And so. No, I'm just. So we're clear on Mary. Are you clear on what has to happen here? Okay.
I have a question about this. So if a student comes back and they still have nits in their hair, that's not a problem anymore because it means if they had the shampoo, those are not going to develop into actual lice. Is that what it's saying?
That's correct.
Okay.
Contrary to what?
It's hard. It's hard not to make jokes.
Well,
are we bringing that back?
John, did you make a motion on item number 19?
No, I need the clarification
on
what happened there, because the usually is just in the little overview to us.
Right.
What change are we making, John, in the actual board policy?
Well, the actual board policy, where it says excluded students may return to school when the parent guardian verifies treatment.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't tell you how they're going to verify it, so that would be changed to indicate there would either be a note or a call,
or
something
a phone
that's
call.
Specific.
Yeah. Rarely they bring a note, so primarily it's by phone.
So instead of having verified treatment, there should be a specific action that they'll take, send a note or call the school.
Okay.
And with that change, I move that the revisions be adopted as set forth.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Peter? Okay, second. All right, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Passes 7-0. Item number 21, Mrs. Botwin.
Thank you. I just, only in 21, I questioned at the bottom under recommendation. It says that the Board of Education approved the field trip applications for Morro Bay High School leadership class retreat at a private residence in Morro Bay on August 23rd and 24th. And that kind of made me shiver a little, thinking of 150 kids retreating to a private residence in Morro Bay for a two-day. Hey, wait a minute. Are we sufficiently legally covered in this kind of situation?
It's the leadership class, Mrs. Botwin, so there are 15 students involved.
15 students involved? How many chaperones?
Four. Two staff members and two parents, all fingerprinted.
Okay, so it's all hunky-dory, but we're not even that, I assume.
And I know, Dr. Valentine, you have something to say about that, and Mrs. Botwin, and Mrs. Dickinson.
Well, I'll lead. One of the suggestions that we've made to the board in past correspondence is with the dedication of $1.6 million in the strategic plan to the strategic plan, we shared a variety of objectives with the board connected with that process. I would like to propose an opportunity to do a study session, use it as kind of a trial run for the protocols that the board just looked at and directed staff to proceed with, on the strategic plan, what the specific objectives are for the $1.6 million, what we have done regarding that to give progress report, and also to give some kind of overview, perhaps, of the new dollars that are coming in and how we are looking at those. And if the board chooses to go forward with that study session, that we would work through the board president and board clerk and through the Friday packet to develop questions. You can communicate with me or with the board president and clerk to develop questions, which we would publish ahead of time to be addressed in the topic. Question of staff impact and those kinds of things. Staff is recommending the study session, so I think that kind of takes care of that. But anyway, to give this a trial run and see if we get where we want to go through this process.
So what you're thinking, Dr. Valentine, is that the board would have an opportunity to address questions related to strategic planning to either me or John or you. I'm then thinking, would we, at a meeting prior to that, discuss the questions and winnow the questions down, or do you see that as a process that would be more of a subcommittee? How are you seeing that work?
I can see it either way. I guess I'd want to know what the board felt comfortable with. I'm always most comfortable with smaller groups and, okay, and focused discussions that can go here and there in an extended period of time, but I'm comfortable if the board wants to discuss it as a whole, they're welcome to.
You know, discussing questions could be sort of time-consuming, but I don't know.
I would expect everyone would submit questions if they had them, and staff would really devise questions since it's partly our idea.
John, what are you guys thinking from the...
Well, formulated and maybe prioritized, and then discuss at that point what staff would be necessary to address those questions and have that discussion. So this would be done...
So the first two are preliminary, and then the rest are the evaluation part.
And the rest are the evaluation part, yeah.
Okay. Is that... The first thing, I guess, that we need to hear from the board is Dr. Valentine has suggested that we hold a future study session on strategic planning and that study session be held at the second meeting in October. Is there support for that notion?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Mrs. Dickinson is supporting it. Is there other support for that notion? Okay, we have enough people from the board to support that.
Actually, for a study session, the protocol would suggest a motion and an action.
Okay. So would somebody make a motion for that, please? That we move to... actually, I'll make that motion that the second school board meeting in October be devoted to a study session on strategic planning and that we follow the protocols that were developed by the board subcommittee. Do I hear a second for that?
I'll second that.
The motion has been made by me and seconded by Mr. Spadafore. Is there any other discussion about that right now? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So Dr. Valentine will begin that process. Okay. Mrs. Botwin and then Mrs. Dickinson.
Okay. I've got a couple of things here. One that's dear to my heart for the advance agenda I'd like to have on the next board meeting, if possible. That would be September, 5th, I think. I'd like to put our board raises on there. And for the public, I'd like you to know that we're talking about biggies here. We're talking about $12.50 a month per board member. Okay, we discussed this back in February, March, and April and decided to put it off until everybody else had their raises. And we just wanted to make sure there was enough money left for the board members to get an additional $12.50 a month. And we are, just put this on the agenda. We'll have the policy there. We can look at it, discuss it, and et cetera.
Is there support for the discussion of raising the board's pay by 5%.
I think we could discuss it.
Okay,
you don't have to vote for it, Walter.
We have two people who are interested in adding that to the...
lead to a study session on combination classes if we see, in fact, there are holes or openings or student numbers and that kind of thing. Okay, that's just a Friday packet, so I don't even have to get a vote on that, right? Okay, the last one is the fence on Del Mar. I'd like to get that on in the board as an agenda item. Perhaps on September 5th, that we could have that meeting at Del Mar and walk out through the property and look it over and see what the situation actually is. I've been out there, but I want to go back again. But I want to get this on the agenda item in terms of is it going to be a dog park? If it's going to be a dog park, then they need to put a fence up.
Just make the proposal, don't sell it.
Okay, so do I get a second from you?
No,
he's not going to give me. Okay, well, I don't think I need a second for this, Walter.
To add it as an agenda item.
Carolyn, my understanding is that they are not moving forward with a dog park at Del Mar Park.
Okay, so we do still have some problems out there. So I'd like to get this information on the situation at Del Mar in a Friday packet in terms of. Without the fence, the problems, the other kinds of things. I know we had information from Ed, we've had information from Carrie Burton, and there's some very real concerns about them. And I think the board members, when they renovated Del Mar, this was in the works at that time. And I meant to call Brad today and ask him, Brad, you're here. This was in the works when they renovated Del Mar. And it just fell out by the wayside. Do you remember what happened? That there was going to be a fence.
This is. I think we're. I think we're straying from this as a future agenda item,
right.
And
just
having a discussion on this item right now.
That would be one of the questions I would like to have on the Friday packet.
Okay. Can I add something? I think what would be helpful, and I had discussed this with Russell earlier. We have an organization that at no cost. Would provide a risk analysis to us?
SIPE.
SIPE. CISC.
Would SIPE.
CISC would do this one on a property basis.
So CISC would do this. So I think before it's put on the agenda, my feeling would be that Caroline has asked in a Friday packet, but what it would be is
to help us make decisions about playground equipment, fields, and this type of a situation.
Wonderful.
That may not make the September 5th deadline, if that's okay.
I understand it's not an agenda item. It's going to come in a Friday packet when the information's available.
As soon as possible, yeah.
And we'll talk about it. Thanks.
Is that
all right, Carolyn?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
Okay. Mrs. Dickinson? I'm sorry. I was having a little sidebar here.
I was also interested in the situation about combination classes, and I have taught combination classes, but this was in the days before all these standards. But I kind of see this, I don't think it's just an issue of we would have to have more money and separate the classes. I think there's ways to that we could look at how to help those teachers deal with that situation that doesn't really involve money, actually, but just sort of reconfiguring the way we look at education a little bit. And I think it could be actually under this teacher academic freedom. Something has to give. I think that's what they said in their letter. And one of the things that could give, in my view, is this strict adherence to every single standard and every single subject for two separate classes. Not only have I taught combination classes, but I've taught multi-grade situations, not in public schools, but I've taught like first through sixth grade at conferences for a week. And so many fun things happen in multi-grade situations. I would even like to see Teach School be a multi-grade kind of just more creative. You know, like charter schools can let go of standards. It's not like everyone has to do those to become an educated person. And it seems like we could have little enclaves of creativity where we do multi-age things and address the needs of students. I mean, even in the upper grades, we have kids working in math in different levels, and I'm branching out from multi-grade, but now to grouping in schools where kids could move around for different topics taught. I think there's ways that we could look at that situation to help those teachers to ease that situation and give them some more freedom to be creative, and how can this work so that we can teach and enjoy and learn without the stress of all this structure, your academic freedom that would be part of multi-grade, and just more creative approaches to not feeling so bound by standards and still having a very, rigorous program that's creating highly educated students. There's more than one way, to have a quality education.
That sounds to me like it's a bigger topic than either teacher academic freedom or combination classes. And I'm not sure. I'm not opposed to that discussion. I'm not sure how we're going to get there right now.
Maybe it's just an idea the staff could look at it and think about it. I mean, I don't know, with your principals and all. I don't know.
Adrian, I think what your point is are there ways of thinking outside what we, the academic box that we've drawn, that the state's drawn, that the federal government has drawn? Are there ways of looking at that in a little bit different way in order to continue to deliver quality education for students? I think that's probably what you're asking for. And that still does the same, that still accomplishes the same things with the high standards that we want for our
students.
Right,
and then it's less stressful for teachers and makes it more fun and interesting again.
Okay. I'm not sure quite where the staff can take that. I don't know. Okay. All right. Any other advanced agenda items? No, I think you've raised an interesting point, and I'm not sure. I'm just not sure how to get there right now, is all. Okay. That makes sense. John?
And just, Adrian, no, I think there was a lot there that's important.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if at another meeting, if there was a way to consolidate that into a focused direction and then bring it to...
I don't know. We have committees maybe staff could just think about ways that might happen, just to look at it.
We can certainly think about it. The correspondence we received was probably not angling towards receiving our advice on how to change the teaching structure of the school district. I think the request, and I think it's expanded in the... in your suggestion, Mrs. Dickinson, but I think the request really was...
Both that tomorrow the Personnel Commission has a meeting at 4 o'clock, and the majority of their meeting tomorrow is to review their goals and also to note the activities they perform during the year. And I would just personally say, as I have been a member on the Personnel Commission for 3 years, that they do an amazing job for the classified employees. And in their activities during 2005-2006, they did something that hasn't been done that I was aware of before. They made site visits to several places to actually evaluate, see what was taking place at the school. And I just wanted to note that the Personnel Commission provides an amazing service to the district as how they represent and assist the classified personnel in every aspect of their job. And tomorrow they're going to have a meeting when they'll be reviewing this, and it's an honor, and I think we should all be thankful for all the work they do.
Mrs. Botwin?
I brought the booklet along, and I wanted to specifically thank John for bringing it up. Their annual report lists their goals and their activities during 2005 and 2006, and it was a time-consuming, detail-oriented job, and they do a wonderful job. So our thanks to these people who help us. If we had to do that on top of this, none of us would be sitting here. Jerry Ambrose, who's newly elected to it, Navit Bar, who's been with it for a long time, and thank you for that, and Gail Sears, who's new added this year also, and just dug right in. So thank you especially for the time and effort, and I will make an effort to try and go tomorrow. I had one other thing I wanted to mention about on the reports. Saturday night I did... I really had a wonderful time. The class of 1986 at Morro Bay had called and requested that I join them at Madonna Inn for their reunion, their 20-year reunion. And I couldn't resist that. You want to go back and see these little kids, these that were squirts in 9th grade and 10th grade and gangly in 11th and 12th. And I went back and saw the loveliest bunch of mature adults. Consider, at this time, they're 38, 39 years old. So there was a tremendous difference. But damn if I didn't recognize every single one of them. Even the ones I didn't like and that didn't like me. But it was a wonderful evening, and I enjoyed being with them, and I enjoyed seeing them. And it gave me a lot of enthusiasm for the coming
Westfield Roll at Home. And this just a reminder to everybody that school starts August 29th. And so... parents, make sure your kids get to school, give them good breakfast, and send them off, and know that they're going to be well taken care of and well educated in our district. And I would entertain a motion for adjournment.
I make a motion.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Carries 7-0. Thank you very much.